There's so many builders out there. When they're talking to builders, what are some of the questions they should be asking just to guarantee that, you know, they're making a good purchasing decision and heading down the right path with a custom rifle build?
Wow, I could talk about that question all day long.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry Podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. This show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, visit exomountaingear.com. Well, welcome to episode 128. We are speaking in this episode with the crew from Snowy Mountain Rifles. In this show, we talk a bit about factory rifles versus fully custom rifles, as well as that in-between category of taking a factory rifle and doing some modifications and accuracy work on that. So what are the differences? When should you choose one over the other? If you are going with a rifle builder, whether to do a from the ground up fully custom rifle build or taking that factory rifle and doing some improvements, how should you select the builder? What should you look for? There's a ton to discuss on this topic, and this only scratches the surface. We'll be talking to Snowy Mountain again on the podcast as we dive deeper into topics to consider when building a custom rifle. So be sure to let us know if you have questions. Just send them in to us by email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Speaking of contacting us, thank you to those that reach out with your questions, comments, and suggestions, or leave your review in iTunes or Stitcher or wherever else you might be listening to this. This week, we've selected Ben Myers for his feedback, and we'll be sending him some Exo Mountain Gear swag. So Ben, contact us with your shipping information. Okay, let's dive into this discussion on building a rifle, custom, factory, or something in between, with Snowy Mountain Rifles. All right, so on the podcast, we have a crew from the Snowy Mountain Rifle Works. If you guys could just go ahead and introduce yourselves real quick, your role at the company, and just so let us know who's on the line.
Hey guys, we got Paul Donaldson here. I'm vice president.
We got Garrett Schmidt here. I'm a gunsmith here at Snowy Mountain Rifle.
And I am Greg Eisenbarger. I am the, I guess, general manager, you call me. I kind of do all the odds and ends that nobody else wants to do.
I love the small companies are like, I'm not sure what my title is. We just kind of make it up and I get the job
done. Pretty much.
So, Paul, why don't you kick us off? Just kind of give us some background context on the company, maybe a bit of history before we dive into getting really specific on rifles.
Sure, man. Jason Rigby, who's my partner in this, I spoke with him a little bit about this topic earlier. Unfortunately, he's not here tonight. He's the president of the company and was really the founder of the thing here going back to 2009. Him and a previous business partner bought a machine shop and for other uses. And Jason's always been kind of a hobbyist gunsmith and just a gun enthusiast. And they were trying to fill a void of time where their CNC machinery and manual machinery weren't being used. And Jason came up with the idea to try to make some guns. And they spent about a year in the designing stage and started producing and selling rifles in 2010. And it's just kind of growing and advanced in leaps and bounds, and you know how we do things, and obviously the quality of things we do, and how we produce rifles. But that's basically the long and the short of how the company got started.
Yeah, that's awesome. So tonight, I mean, we just kind of want to do somewhat of an introductory podcast, but obviously, anytime we get into rifles, it's a big topic. There's so much that we could talk about. We've done rifle series, kind of diving deep into different aspects in the past with the show, but one thing we haven't really talked about is custom rifles. And so kind of the main goal tonight is just to kind of introduce this topic for listeners who are maybe unaware of what they're getting out of a custom rifle, unaware of what goes into building a custom rifle. And that kind of includes us, right? Like Steve and I, this is new to us in terms of the custom rifle side of things. So whoever wants to answer this, I'm not going to throw the questions at any of you directly. Just feel free to whoever's best equipped to answer this or wants to chime in. But I just love to start off, you know, we'll dive deeper into it later, but really just give us a big picture on custom rifles, what goes into it, just from a super high level. If you give kind of the elevator speech to a potential customer, what are some of the differences, the main things with a custom rifle versus something, you know, straight from the factory off of a production line from one of the big manufacturers?
Okay. I'll kind of let Greg start this one out since he kind of gives this spiel to a lot of people. And then me and Garrett kind of follow up with some things we might think about while he's talking.
So, you know, primarily, I think the biggest things with a custom rifle that you're getting is, you know, basically, you know, I think the obvious answer is exactly what you want out of a rifle. And obviously, with that being said, you know, the other great things you're getting are something accurate, something repeatable. You know, we build our rifles a little bit more utilitarian. They're not, I mean, yeah, they're great to look at, but they're also meant to be used and abused. You know, kind of like a custom car, if you will. You know, there's a bunch of car nuts out there, and everybody kind of likes what they like. But you're able to put every entity that you'd like to see in that rifle and have it perform exactly the way you'd like to have it perform. And for, you know, for the, I guess beginner, it's about the accuracy, the precision. I'm sure Garrett can speak a lot more loudly, to the effect of the precision, machining that goes into it. There's a big difference between, you know, a factory rifle where you have a guy on one side of the factory making a barrel, a guy on the other side of the factory making a action, and they kind of just throw them both together. Our gunsmiths here, who do a phenomenal job, I'll put them up with any gunsmith in the country, but basically what they're doing is taking each action and each barrel and basically mating them together to form, you know, one piece. It's not something thrown together. It's something built for each other, basically mating the two parts. So I think that's the biggest thing is the machining that goes into it equates to tolerances, which obviously at the end of the day gives you a, you know, phenomenal piece of equipment.
I like that you said utilitarian use. I think I was telling Paul this at a show the other day about it. I almost got into an argument with a guy over the phone the other day about he has, you know, he was toting about his $5,000-$6,000 gun, and it basically had to be like perfectly wrapped in this velvet case, and then he was just going to pull it out to make the shot, you know, and he was like, he was really like upset that he couldn't attach the gun, like have the gun completely hidden and encased in a scabbard inside the pack. And I was just like, man, what's the point of a hunting rifle if it's got to be so well protected? So I like how he used the word utilitarian and beat him up, because more than anything, it's a hunting rifle. It's got to get used, right?
Absolutely.
Well, and I'll kind of let Garrett carry the topic of the action into the barrel into I guess the next topic here, because I mean, you know, your action is first and foremost on the gun. I mean, that's, you know, that is the main component to the gun, the thing that, chambers the round, holds all the pressure, and, you know, that's your number one most important component on a gun, and the mating of a barrel to that chamber so everything's lined up is the first thing that happens for accuracy reasons. So I'll go ahead and let Garrett, our gunsmith here, kind of give you some more in-depth details on how that happens.
Hey guys, how are you guys doing?
Excellent, man.
Yeah, first off, I want to say Defiance Arms builds our actions, and those guys and their capabilities and talents are second to none. When you take a product of that quality and the type of barrels that we use, it allows me as the gunsmith to start with components that are top notch. And then from there, you know, it's up to my ability to, you know, indicate the center line of the barrel to the center line of the action. And then from there, I can go ahead and cut the threads and put a match grade chamber in there. That's all concentric with the center line of that barrel and that action, because the fitting of that is what gives you repeatability and the constant and accuracy.
It's something I probably should have touched on a little bit, and I didn't earlier. Another huge difference between probably the biggest difference between a factory rifle and a custom rifle is going to be componentry. That is probably the number one difference you're going to see is the componentry that we run in our custom rifles versus what you get off factory shelf are night and day different.
The barrels that we're using now, I have bushing sets for every caliber that I fit specific bushings to the diameter of the bores. And the barrels that we're running right now are usually within 2 or 3 tenths of the optimum number, just about guaranteed every single time.
So the work that you're doing then, you're taking a barrel component and an action component, as you kind of mentioned, finding that center line, doing some truing. And then you mentioned you're doing the chambering. Are you doing the rifling as well with the barrel? Kind of walk us through kind of the steps involved between just, besides just mating those two together, what else machine work are you doing?
Well, what we're doing, when we get a barrel in, the rifling and all that stuff has been completed outside of our shop. That's a whole different monster in itself. And it's contoured. And so basically we're getting what they call a barrel blank, which is, you know, say a 30-inch barrel blank that has a contour to fit the type of stock that we're going to use. And then from there is when I put it into my machine. And like I said, I have range rods and different things that I use that have bushings on them that I fit to each individual barrel. And then from there, I indicate with a tense indicator to find the top dead zero that I can, because there's no such thing as a perfectly straight hole through a barrel. Each barrel has an arc to it. It's about finding that arc, the center of it, making sure that that chamber lines up with the highest point of that arc and timing it to the action when it's all screwed together.
So help me understand timing. What is it? What do you mean? I mean, I have this mental picture of what I think might be true of that, but I'm also ignorant.
You want the arch of the barrel to match the trajectory of the bullet. So you're not really impeding anything, or at long range, running out of scope adjustment left to right. You want to be able to optimize your windage and elevation, you know, with the arc of the bullet.
I think to put it in layman's term, what Garrett's getting at is you basically want essentially the hole in the barrel to be pointed up, not left to right. So when that bullet leaves the barrel, it's already heading up where it wants to go. If you put the arc of the bore pointed to the ground, well, you're already kind of fighting gravity. So,
and to help too, a little bit of the clarity of just, you know, what we get and what we do, you know, obviously, like we said, the first step is mating the barrel to the action. So once we have the action, we get the barrel blank. Basically all that's done to that, what's called a barrel blank, is just rifling. And then, we cut it to length, you know, custom hand chamber it. And then custom, you know, hand thread it. And then that's where you mate the barrel to the action, thread them together. And then that's where, you know, all the centering and the lining up all comes into play through all those processes. But that's basically the simple version of mating a barrel to an action, how we do it.
This whole idea of an arc that, you know, the cut through the barrel's not 100% perfect. One is you mentioned that the tolerances on the barrels you're getting are very good. And I'm assuming that they're not as good for your average production rifle. And then secondarily, most likely your production rifle also isn't ensuring that that arc is where it should be, meaning pointing that bullet up. So it could be kind of arcing to the right, arcing to the left, etc. Is that why you think with a factory rifle, sometimes, you know, you might take 10 of the same factory rifles off the shelf and one shoots much better than the other? Part of it is the luck of the draw of you got that arc done right, you happen to, on that factory rifle versus the one next to it that came off the same line. It might be thrown a little bit left, if you will, just to put it in layman's terms. Is that accurate?
Well, yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. But you got to remember in factory production assembly line type work environments, you're just nothing's individualized. It's all the
mass
same
production.
Mass production. So they're not really looking at the diameters like we are of this barrel, the arcs of these barrels, how they're fit up to the action. They just have a manual machine, or not a manual, but an automated machine that they load a barrel into. They have programs wrote for it. They hit a button, it does its thing, and when it comes out, it's fine. The threads look perfect, but are they to the center of that hole in the center line of that barrel? Probably not most of the time. Are they going to be close? Yeah, relatively.
And that's where you get, you know, a lot of, like Greg mentioned, repeatability in our firearms through the life of them. You know, not just repeatability at 100 yards, but repeatability at distance.
Do you guys use a certain type of rifling with the barrels? You know, we've talked previously in the podcast about the different types of rifling, you know, button rifling, things like that. Are all of the barrels that you use of a certain type, and is there a reason for that?
We don't use a specific type. We use a couple different barrel companies. We've kind of got it narrowed down to a few different manufacturers, one of which being a button rifle. And, you know, you can kind of, I think, speak on, you know, how rifle barrels are made until you're blue in the face. I believe it's more of a process. Like, you know, there could be guys button rifling barrels much better than other guys that cut rifling barrels. That's just a process. I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's how that buttoning is being done and the processes that they're going through to ensure that it's being done correctly. But we do typically use one company that we generally use buttons and the other one cut. So we use a couple different ones. And in all honesty, you know, I have no, I guess, no opinion either way. I can't say one shoots better than the other. You know, it's hard to argue that one is always going to shoot better than the other. I just don't think that's entirely true. It's just a different process of getting to that point.
Well, and I think to touch on that point is a lot of it is, you know, just like it is when we, you know, made these products together and build this rifle, it's quality control. It's the, you know, type of metal that they're using, you know, in the barrels and all the stuff that comes with the quality control before it's cut or however they choose to rifle that barrel.
And to sum this up, as a gunsmith, my job is to find and fit that barrel correctly to the receiver. And when that's done correctly, I think button and cut rifle barrels are more than capable of being repeatable and extremely accurate.
So with the barrel fitted to the action, Garrett, where do things go from here in terms of your steps in the process of building this rifle? Are you looking at dropping this barreled action into a stock already? Is there more work on your end? Kind of what's next in the process?
Well, to be honest with you, I guess what we'll do is I'll give you a walkthrough of what I do when I approach a build, if that'd be okay.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. It's one of these things where it's like, I don't know what I don't know about the custom rifle build. I'd love to get it from your perspective.
So what we're basically going to do is, I say we're going to come up and we're going to start with the action, okay? So even when I get an action in, there's steps in which I take to make sure that this action is true, such as the shoulder where the barrel butts into the action, okay, as well as the recoil lugs on the bolt itself. I want to make sure that they're square and that I have, you know, 100% contact on each locking lug when that bolt is forward and in battery, as well as I want to make sure that the bolt face, the nose of that bolt where the brass sits against the bolt, is true. So I go through and I make sure that those three spots are accounted for and square. And then from there, I'll go ahead and start the barrel process. And so I'm going to go ahead and take the measurements on my action to see how long the threads need to be, how deep the breech face needs to be in order for me to then set the barrel into my lathe and indicate the barrel in. And I have a spider basically on the tail end of my lathe that holds the crown in, the muzzle end of the barrel, and I have a four-jaw chuck that holds the breech in or the chamber in, and I can take both of them, and that's when I have the rods that I put in with bushings, and I adjust both of them front and back multiple times to make sure that I find the center line. Once the center line is found, I then go ahead and cut the threads. And then after I cut the threads, I go ahead and move to the chamber. Once the chamber's done, I go ahead and screw the barrel onto the action, do the final preparations on my headspace to make sure that's done. And then what I'll do is I'll come back to the lathe if there needs to be a muzzle brake, and I go ahead and thread and crown and fit a muzzle brake to the muzzle end of the barrel. From that point, what I'll do is I'll go ahead and pull that out so we have a completely barreled action, and we'll walk over to our stock and we'll set it in our stock to make sure that the barrel channel is, you know, free of pressure points, everything is cleanly fit, and the reveals for the gaps and the fitting of the bottom metals, everything is set there. And then from that point, I will go ahead and bed the action, and we use DEFCON steel bedding to bed an inch in front of the recoil lug all the way back to the rear tang. We full-length bed on all of our custom rifles to ensure that we have a 100% custom fit. Therefore, nothing can move, nothing can change. We're able to put about 60 inch pounds of torque down on each action screw, so there's not going to be anything there that's going to change. And then when that comes out, I obviously will inlet all the bedding to make sure that, you know, all the over spill is cut clean. From there, I'll go ahead and put a trigger on it and set the trigger, and then fit bottom metal, cut the action screws to length, and then we go ahead and run a magazine test to make sure feeding and extraction is clean. And from there, we go over to the testing.
And we go shooting.
Awesome. Yeah, I'd love to back up on a few points. I think it was mentioned previously a barrel blank might come in around 30 inches. Is that kind of a standard? And then is it up to the customer, the length that they want their barrels cut? And how do you kind of advise them on a barrel length based on maybe the cartridge that they're choosing?
Barrel lengths are probably the most talked about thing when a guy's building a custom rifle. You know, we get the, well, I don't know, I kind of want a 24, but maybe I'll do a 22. I mean, guys go back and forth. At the end of the day, you know, it's caliber derivative. You know, we build a lot of, we're trending to build a lot of barrels shorter these days. You know, we hardly ever see a 30 inch barrel. Guys that are building 30 inch barrels are, you know, F class shooters or bench rest shooters that are just trying to get every little bit of speed out of it. These days we're catering more to, you know, your hunters and your, you know, PRS shooters and things like that, where, you know, speed isn't the biggest deal in the world. I mean, let's be honest, with optics these days, it's just another click or two on the scope, on the turret, and, you know, you're hitting home. So, yeah, barrel length is basically trying to get a little bit more speed out of it, or if a guy's not so worried about it. Like, me personally, I like a shorter barrel, easier to handle, a little bit more rigidity in the barrel, things like that. That certainly tickles my fancy a little bit more than, you know, a big 30-inch barrel that's hard to carry through the woods and things like that.
Yeah, I remember that podcast we did with Kleckner. I believe you said shorter barrels can tend to be more accurate just because there's less whip in the barrel when you shoot.
Absolutely.
Another huge thing about barrels is probably twist rate.
Twist rate's another big one.
Yeah, so depending on the bullets that you're going to shoot, you know, everybody's going to have their own opinion on what twist is better for the bullet you're shooting.
Yeah, and that's not only the caliber, right? Like, that's the actual bullet weight. Sometimes in a caliber might, you know, prefer one twist rate over the
absolutely
other.
Absolutely,
right. Stabilization is a huge aspect in the long-range world.
This is kind of skipping ahead to maybe the testing, and we'll maybe come back to some of the process before we get there. But since we're talking about twist rate and kind of mentioned caliber and maybe a specific bullet, I'm curious, what testing do you guys do beyond maybe a function test? And is it ever where you are recommending the customer go with a certain bullet weight or even a certain maybe off-the-shelf ammunition product or a certain load if they're hand loading? Does it get that particular with what you're recommending for the rifle that you were delivering to them?
Absolutely.
Yeah, as far as, you know, if you want to call it testing, you know, we guarantee all of our customs to shoot half MOA, you know, a three-shot group under half MOA at 100 yards is what we guarantee. We expect our rifles to really shoot better than that. So with that guarantee comes along, you know, load development. So once the rifle's been, you know, basically put together, function tested, and is ready to go for load development, you know, then we start that process. You know, we've done this enough now that, you know, for certain calibers, we kind of have a good idea of what it's going to like. And so we'll load up a few different choices of what we think's going to like. Usually one of them ends up being pretty close, and then we can fine tune from there. And then once we fine tuned, found the load that rifle likes, make sure it repeats that load, then we can give the customer, you know, a dummy round. You know, we always send a target out, you know, to show and confirm that the rifle shot. It'll have all the information, you know, that on the target plus on the dummy round that customer will then need to go home and be able to replicate that load.
And at the end of the day, to further, I think, kind of answer that question, yeah, we have a really good idea of, you know, what a customer is going to want to shoot and then what twist rate is going to best accompany that. You know, say, you know, 6.5 Creedmoor, for instance, is extremely popular. You know, I'm going to recommend a 1/8 barrel twist because a guy these days is going to want to shoot like a 130, 140. And that's going to – that 1/8 twist rate is going to give that bullet a chance to stabilize and all that fun stuff before it leaves the barrel. And like Paul was saying, I mean, we've done this so much at this point that we have pet loads for rifles that we know, you know, for instance, like a going back to that 6.5 Creedmoor, you know, for a 130 burger, it's going to, you know, it's going to take that bullet. It's going to need to be seated at such and such depth, and it's going to take X amount of powder. And we're going to be damn close every time we go and shoot that gun, you know, to get that, you know, half to quarter minute accuracy out of that rifle.
There's probably a good solid 40 years worth of reloading experience sitting in this shop. So we every once in a while get lucky and find an acorn, I guess.
A little something goes into it. I'm just thinking what a huge, like, another huge benefit that is to a custom rifle. I mean, not only, again, just going back to the factory, you're somewhat taking your chances on, yeah, hopefully I get a good one off the production line, and then I get one, and then I have to play around with either a bunch of hand loads or a bunch of, you know, different boxes off the shelf, and then kind of find what that rifle likes, and that's time, and that's money, versus just getting this thing and knowing what it wants to eat and knowing what's going to fly incredibly well. That's awesome.
Absolutely. And you know, that's something that we definitely get feedback from our customers, how nice it is that, you know, we send them a dummy round, you know, no powder, no primer, but you know, you can basically set your die to that load, and then obviously replicate the powder charge and the primer and, you know, the brass and all that fun stuff, and you're basically ready to hit the ground running. I mean, it's just one of those things that, you know, you're not going to have to deal with. You're not going to have to search the shelves to find, you know, a specific brand, flavor, you know, type of ammo. And then, you know, for some guys, the load development process is what they want. You know, I've had guys like, sure, hey man, just make sure it goes bang and, you know, send it to me. I want to do the load development. At the end of the day, you know, we still have to make sure that rifle shoots and shoots well. But, you know, it's such a nice feeling when you get a gun and you have a load that you know is going to shoot extremely well. You know, my favorite part about it is when you get a, you know, give a guy a target and he's like, well, I can't shoot that good. I'm like, perfect. Well, your rifle will. So, you know, in time.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking. You said, you know, guarantee a half MOA. I'm thinking, somebody's hands, maybe. I'll know about mine.
and honestly, you know, that's worst case. You know, that's basically where we're like, okay, we feel comfortable with that rifle shooting half MOA. you know, it's going to do better. It may need a little bit more fine tuning if the customer really wants to get it shooting, you know, supremely well, but you know, half MOA is what we guarantee. So, you know, most of our rifles are in that quarter minute arena. And it's, you know, not that tumultuous to get there.
That's crazy.
So one of the kind of the components we skipped as we skipped ahead in this process was you mentioned, Garrett, the trigger. Do you guys tend to stick with a specific component there? Is that another option where somebody ordering the rifle has, you know, kind of a menu to choose from? What's your thoughts on trigger and approaches?
Well, it's going to come down to almost personal preference, as well as we here at Snowy Mountain also, you know, kind of have an understanding what tends to work. We got to fill out each customer, see what their use is. We have basically two brands of triggers that we tend, sometimes three, you know, I guess three, to push, you know. Any one of the three is going to be an exceptional trigger that's totally tunable to the customer's like, you know, poundage. You know, you're going to have a solid trigger with not, that doesn't feel spongy, that's going to break clean and crisp, you know, every single time. So when you go up to the bench or you got that trophy standing in front of you, I mean, it's the same feel every time. It's not nothing's going to change on it. And it's so vital to accuracy, is and such an overlooked thing to have a quality trigger that's consistent and the same, because you don't have to think about it. It comes down to muscle memory and feel, and practice with your gun, you know, it becomes an extension of you.
You know, one thing that I see out there a fair amount is guys talking about having a rifle upgraded. So maybe it's a factory rifle or what have you. Tell us about that path of taking, you know, a factory rifle and maybe swapping for a better barrel or having the action trued or something like that versus just going custom from the beginning. Do you find that, you know, guys who start with a factory rifle and end up upgrading stock or having action trued, swapping a barrel, would they have just been better off going custom from the beginning?
Excellent question. Yes, custom rifle all day long. you know, we get that all the time where guys are, you know, just for conversation's sake, Remington 700, it's probably the most customizable rifle on the planet. It's kind of like your Chevy 350 motor of rifles. They just make everything for it, right? And I get that question all the time. You know, what should I do with my rifle to make it, you know, a better shooting gun? You know, the two things that I recommend first and foremost, trigger number one, muzzle brake number two. And I get a lot of, I guess I get a lot of flack sometimes about the muzzle brake. My reasoning for recommending a muzzle brake is, you know, I don't care who you are, recoil is a thing. It happens. It's not that fun. You know, some guys claim that, oh, you know, recoil doesn't bother me, but I promise you it does. Whether it bothers you, you know, physically or not is one thing, but mentally it's another thing. So when you can basically take, say, a 300 Win Mag and all of a sudden you can make it recoil less than a 243, you're going to shoot that rifle better. And with, you know, on that same point, you know, when a guy's squeezing a 6-pound trigger, you're going to be moving around a little bit, and all that, you know, equates, especially at distance, to being able to hit your target or not. So those are my two main things. I mean, obviously every rifle is different. When a guy brings in a rifle, we'll kind of check it over for him and, you know, recommend some different things, but those are usually the two things that I'll recommend first and foremost to pseudo customize your factory rifle.
And to touch on the muzzle brake, not only is the recoil reduction, you know, great for all the reasons Greg just touched on, but also when you take that recoil reduction out of that gun, that allows you to really help you self-spot for yourself. Now you can stay inside the scope. When that gun goes off, you're not getting kicked out of the gun. And if you're in a hunting situation or just in a target situation where you're shooting alone, hunting alone, that allows you to, especially at distance, be able to spot for yourself and be able to track the impact of that bullet.
Do you guys recommend muzzle brakes even for, you know, some of the non-magnum, you know, somebody's not shooting a 300 Win Mag, maybe they're shooting a 6.5. Do you still recommend it there?
I'll be honest with you. even in the varmint world, we're putting muzzle brakes on for the simple point that Paul just touched on. When you can watch everything happen through the scope and never leave your target, even under recoil, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I've got a 16-pound plus 260 Remington with a muzzle brake on it, and it's like shooting a pellet gun, except for you can shoot it at 1,500 yards, and that's...
I have a 20-caliber varmint gun that I have a muzzle brake on that weighs 15 pounds, and you can watch the red mist right in the scope.
Wow. It just makes them not only enjoyable to shoot, it makes the gun more shootable, and it also...
Confidence. Shooting is 98% in your mind. And
for sure,
if you ever have been hit by a scope, it hurts really bad. And, you know, it's not going to make your hunting trip. It's not going to do anything. And then if you missed on top of it, you're really mad because now you got to tell everybody that not only did you get scope whipped, I missed too. So,
well, and not only, you know, does it allow for you to spot yourself. I mean, everybody likes to think, and it's always great when it happens when you know, whether you're shooting steel or an animal, when the first shot you take is perfect. But if it's not, if you miss, you know, if you're able to spot for yourself, it allows you to correctly adjust and come back with a quick follow-up shot, where if you can't stay inside your scope and spot for yourself, you have no idea where your point of impact was.
Confidence is the whole key to be able to shoot consistently. And if you're confident in your weapon and you never have to worry about that weapon kicking you or hitting you in the face, you're going to do nothing but focus on being a better shooter. And that's going to, in the end, make everybody happier when they can day in and day out go and repeat the same type of accuracy.
And, you know, let's not forget the most important thing about, you know, rifles and precision shooting is pulling the trigger. And, you know, who wants to go out to the range and shoot 100 rounds through a, you know, 300 ultra mag that's just going to pull at you every time you pull the trigger? It's just not fun, right? So every time you're going out to practice with your gun and everything, you're just getting beat up, and it makes it kind of unenjoyable. Like I said, I mean, you know, trigger time is, you know, is so important, so vitally important to, you know, distance shooting and just shooting in general, to be confident in your platform. And, you know, like I said, muzzle brakes just kind of aid in the ability to go shoot your rifle multiple times without, you know, getting sore shoulders and kind of everything that comes along with it.
Guys, this is just a scratch on the surface of so much we could talk about. So I want to get you guys back for part two for several reasons. One is just to discuss these topics a bit more in depth. And also talk about, you know, a build that we're going to work on with you guys. And then I want an opportunity to put this first one out there and maybe gather some listener questions and then come back at you guys with that. But to wrap this one up, if somebody's in the market for a custom rifle, maybe they're just considering it, how should they start? Like, where should they start with their search? There's so many builders out there. When they're talking to builders, what are some of the questions they should be asking? Just to guarantee that, you know, they're making a good purchasing decision and heading down the right path with a custom rifle build.
Wow. I could talk about that question all day long. I mean, you know, as far as, trying to figure out how to answer this in a short way. You know, componentry, it comes down to a lot of componentry. The other thing would be, you know, how you're actually producing rifles. You know, there's a lot of people throwing barrels on CNC machines these days and just reaming them out in mass quantities. You know, one of my big things, like my favorite question or my favorite question to a customer is, what do you want to do with a rifle? Because, you know, unfortunately, there is no unicorn rifle out there. There's no 5-pound, you know, I'm going to shoot it, you know, a mile and a half accurately rifle out there. So, you know, rifles, you know, we can build them, you know, for intended use. And I love a guy that's like, hey, I want to build a rifle. This is exactly what I want to use it for. You know, what do you think would be best for me to do this? That's my favorite, because we can kind of tailor the rifle to their intended use and basically get them the best possible rifle we can for that scenario, if that makes sense. I mean, I'd love to say, hey, you know, you buy an SMR rifle, you know, it's going to be everything you ever wanted in a rifle. But at the end of the day, you know, a guy that wants to shoot, you know, 2 miles is not going to build the same rifle as the guy that wants to hunt, you know, 12 miles in the backcountry. Ain't going to happen. Totally. We're talking about two different things. So, you know, like I said, my biggest thing when I'm talking to a customer is what specifically do you want to do with the rifle? And then build it around that.
Yeah, I know that was the first question I talked about with you guys and the build we're doing is what was the goal for our rifle, right? And that was to build a lightweight backcountry rifle that could still shoot, you know, really well at long range, but realizing that, you know, Lenny and I aren't the guys that are going to go shoot something at 1,000 yards. So that was, yeah, it was definitely exactly what you guys led with.
Well, and that's, you know, when it comes to your rifle, I mean, that's exactly, you know, what will we built it around. I mean, can you take that rifle out and shoot steel with that rifle at 1,200 yards? Absolutely.
We'll do
it. And that's where it's great, you know, for you guys, anybody to be able to go, like we talked about trigger time, you know, learn your gun, become a better shooter. And that's where you can go out in the field and then be comfortable, you know, with that, you know, 400 or 500 yard shot. You know, you're not pushing extreme distances, but you have the weight capabilities to push the distances, but all of this also the gun's light enough to pack it. And that's kind of that happy medium, but it's always hard to do. Like Greg said, there's no unicorn gun.
And, you know, just to put it out there, I know it's a hot topic kind of in the industry and things like that. By no means are we recommending that just because you build a custom rifle, is that going to allow you to make a, you know, extended range shot on an animal. That's definitely not the case. It's a matter of being behind the trigger and knowing your gun, knowing exactly what it does. I mean, I know for us here, everybody at the shop, we shoot a lot. I mean, we've got, you know, tons of trigger time behind rifles every year. That in no way, shape or form, you know, equates to we're going to go out and, you know, knock stuff down at X distance. It's just not the way it is. You know, we're all hunters. You know, we love guns and there's so much data that we collect, to be accurate at long range. You know, it's not a plug and play type situation, with long range rifles. It's just, you know, trigger time and practice and experience, equates being able to make repeatable shots.
Mm-hmm. And to go after that question about who do you trust or who do you pick to have build your rifle? I'm going to suggest that come talk to us at Snowy Mountain. There is not one of us that won't give you an honest and good opinion or a fact, because what we're trying to do is make you happy as a customer first and foremost. So therefore, if you want a quality place to come that's going to stand behind their product and give you the best customer service we can, give us a try, man.
And we love talking about guns.
We've gathered that a little bit just from the past half hour.
Every single one of us at this shop would love anybody to stop in and ask us a question about a rifle or shooting or reloading or anything. I think we all kind of look at each other like, who's going to get there first, you know?
Well, that's what we always tell people. I mean, you know, we're big on our customer service here. You know, no pressure to buy. You can walk in and talk to us about a reloading question, call us, talk to us about a gun, you know, any issues you might be having or any questions you might have. And we like to help people out. So,
and I get that daily. I get, you know, calls from all over the country. Hey, I've got this problem. What do you think it is? You know, don't call us and ask us what that question is, because it's impossible to diagnose rifle issues over the phone. But, I mean, like I said, we love talking guns. If anybody's got any questions about anything, feel free to give us a shout. I'm, you know, never going to rush anybody off the phone or out of the shop, because at the end of the day, that's what we do. I think it's pretty safe to say that everybody here enjoys my favorite part about doing this is getting, you know, pictures back from, you know, deer that they've killed or elk that they've killed after they've taken the rifle out, or, you know, hey man, I just shot this group with this rifle. Like, that's to me what it's all about at the end of the day. Guys, you know, like us, getting excited about the rifle that, you know, they've built with us and going out in the field and using it. We don't, like I said before, we don't build wall hangers. They're not pretty. I mean, I think they're pretty, but, you know, they're utilitarian, and we like guys to go get them dirty and burn powder and have fun with them.
I like scratches on them. You know, I won't lie. I mean,
Beauty marks.
And I know that you saddled that thing up and went and pushed it, because when you come back to me and you show me that picture with the scratches on the gun and that bull or buck or antelope or hog or whatever you got, I know that I did my job, and it makes me feel pretty good, man, because that scratch is not going to hurt that gun. It's just going to tell a story.
Hey, quick, out of curiosity, this is probably a tough question to answer, but say you've got a very good scope mounted on there. Like, how much impact would it take to knock you out of alignment? I mean, you really got to baby the crap out of your gun, or if it falls out of your hand from 3 feet, is that going to affect it?
Go ahead and start.
You know, your scope mount is pretty important. Like, you know, these days, we're building on primarily what we will call an integral, mount, which is basically, you know, a lot of the rifles we build, the rifle we built, you, Steve, has an integral scope mount. So you've basically got, you know, your Picatinny rail, built into your action. So, you know, a lot of force, basically. If your scope rail comes loose, you've got big problems. Because that's catastrophic failure at that point. It's just like anything else. You know, are you going to go, you know, race a car without checking the lugs on your wheels? I mean, it's kind of one of those things. As long as you do your part and make sure everything is tight and spec'd out, you shouldn't encounter any issues. We actually had a customer, I think a couple of years ago, had a horse roll with one of our rifles in the scabbard, and they thought they were done. You know, they were miles in the backcountry and thought they, you know, pretty much done, about to turn around, head back. Well, they, you know, tested the rifle, shot it at a stump at like 100 yards or so, and it was dead on. And, you know, is that always going to be the case? Absolutely not. But, you know, I think, like I said, as long as you do your part, make sure, you know, everything's torqued down as it should be, and all that fun stuff. It would take a lot to throw that.
Okay. It's on your backpack and you slip and fall on your butt. Like, nothing's happened.
You should be fine. I've done it multiple times.
I mean, I can only speak from experience. my current, SMR hunting rifle that I've used for the last 4 years. It's probably got over 300 days on it. It's got multiple horseback hunts. It's got a goat hunt. It's got, you know, the rifle's been dropped, been left out in weather, been thrown in a horse, been in a backpack. And I mean, I'm super, super anal about that kind of stuff. And every time I get home from a hunt, whether I drop that rifle or not, it always goes to the range and gets shot not only at 100 yards for zero, but gets shot at distance to check data before the next one. And I've never had an issue. I mean, obviously that comes down to running high quality componentry, right? You know, what scope you choose. But if you choose the right scope, if you do, you know, your part, like Greg said, and make sure you everything's torqued, you choose the proper rings and componentry, it's going to take a beating, you know, before it should fail on you. But double checking your torques, double checking your zero, double checking your data is always highly recommended.
Well, let's go ahead and cut it here, and before we open up another can of worms, and we'll save that for part two and dive deeper into some of the things we could consider for a custom rifle build, some of the models that you guys have, and then also talk more about the rifle that you guys have been building for us. So super appreciate the time. Thank you guys for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate all of the support that you guys give this show. We would love to see that review in iTunes or Stitcher. And you can also contact us directly via email to podcast@exomountaingear.com. Be sure to share your questions, comments, or feedback. Specifically, if you have questions on this topic of rifle builds, we would love to hear it and consider it for future episodes. Catch you next week for the next show.